Alright.
I mean, we could use what we've got.
I'm recording. Guys, by the way, I'm too broke. I'll do Zoom record too. Too broke for new beer, but I did have a bottle of Tito's, and I did have...
Uh-huh. There we go.
So what I have is homemade pour White Claw.
Yeah.
Hello, page turners and outsiders. I want to talk about the elephant in the room. This Sunday, Steven Soderbergh directed the Oscars telecast. Some people would say well, some people would say strangely. He had a very fast beat tempo in memoriam. Maybe that was because he wanted to fit in more people, but he forgot Jessica Walter.
Or a dinosaur.
Anyone that's an Arrested Development fan, how the fuck do you forget Jessica Walter?
Yeah, it's one of those things that, like, once you hear, you'll never not
see the face. Oh, wow, I did not know that,
Jazz.
You were doing some dinosaur.
You know what I mean? You're going to be like, oh, yeah, that dinosaur.
It's crazy. So, Jack, since you don't know, they did something very strange this year. They did Best Picture.
Oh, yeah, to preface, I have not kept up with the Oscars this
They did
year.
Best Picture before Best Actress and Best Actor. And this, of course, was because they were expecting our fan and friend Riz Ahmed to win Best Actor. But then Anthony Hopkins won Best Actor.
You're leaving,
people on the internet are very
You're leaving
upset
out
our boy
about
Riz did not win.
Amazing
Damn,
detail
coming
of that.
On the podcast.
And you're not letting Jack in on the full experience. It is Joaquin Phoenix. So they bet big on
Phoenix?
Somebody else winning. That would be why they ended it. And they lost. And the Anthony Hopkins won. And he wasn't even fucking there. Like, the shit just was like, oh, fuck, it's over. Like, Joaquin Phoenix accepted the award
That's
for him.
Awesome.
And then,
so what
and
did
then
they do?
Literally, like, they just fucking went to, they were like, credits, credits, credits. We gotta go. Fucking get out. So I'm convinced, because it's Soderbergh, that there's
that's
essentially
awesome.
there's a movie in this. You know what I mean? There's got to be the way that everything was out of order, and I shouldn't say out of order. It's good to shake things up, right? Like, do the Best Picture early. Sometimes I want to turn in. I don't want to watch everything just to see whatever film I wanted lose. So
yeah,
mix it up, right? But also it's a little more chaotic, and then that ending. Everything just wraps up. Everybody's moving. That's like the ending of every one of those Ocean's movies. And I love them. Like, every one of those movies ends with all this chaos and everybody like, da 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 da. And then they have a briefcase full of all the fucking Oscars. And they're like, we'll melt this shit down and sell it to somebody. You know? So, like, I'm convinced there's a backdoor Soderbergh documentary-esque movie about, like, fucking George Clooney producing the Oscars. Yeah, and being like,
how they ripped off the Oscars.
He's not even fucking here. Go to commercial.
All jokes aside, Riz Ahmed wasn't the actor everyone was hedging bets on. It was the late, great Chadwick Boseman, who's a fantastic actor that we all miss. And the Oscars has been famously run by old, white, powerful men. But recently, they've been trying to show their liberal card that they're more, you know, they're more open to people of color winning awards. So without knowing who won the award, they were hedging their bets because in the past, every time an actor has been nominated posthumously, which is after their death, they've won. So no one actually knew who won, but the track record showed that Chadwick Boseman should have won. So they were assuming he was going to win. And then Anthony Hopkins won, which made the Joaquin
yeah.
Phoenix shrug with the award. What the fuck am I doing here? Walk off the stage.
If you guys thought that 2020 and 2021 weren't weird enough, the chaos even leaked into the Oscars.
This is true.
Saying something.
A culmination of an insane year.
We are here to talk about our penultimate Fantagraphics book, but we're going to just do some pop culture stuff real quick. We have a great movie me and Chaz and Jack's brother saw that we want to talk about, but first, I want to bring up the other movie that came out this week because I think me and Chaz had a disagreement on it.
Real soon.
Okay. Here's my problem, Mortal Kombat. which is my number one problem. It shouldn't be called Mortal Kombat. It should be called Extended Training in Cave, where they fight people, but there's no actual Mortal Kombat.
Yes. But this is literally...
Oh, really?
Mortal Kombat, yes.
Fuck that. So they... Are they going to make a sequel where they start killing people?
Don't worry about that.
Oh, okay. So there is Mortal Kombat.
Though. There's just not the combat.
Mortal Kombat just means you're killing people in a fight, right? Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, that is a fair point. The Jack makes a fair point that there is Mortal Kombat. People go into fighting and die.
Just not the Mortal Kombat tournament.
I mean, you stay alive if you win. It's a real Thunderdome. I do agree with that. It's not.
Well, I've been on vacation, so I haven't got to watch that yet. Or a Demon Slayer, but it's going to this week, and I'll have commentary on them next episode.
We're gonna spoil Mortal Kombat. So as an OG Scorpion fan, like Scorpion's always my favorite character since I was like 8 years old.
Scorp gang.
There's parts of the new movie I like because it's heavily centered on Scorpion. But when I was a kid, Scorpion wasn't very popular, and he was portrayed as the bad guy. Now 25 years later, Scorpion's more popular. So in this movie, Sub-Zero is the main antagonist, and Scorpion is a quote-unquote good guy, and the main character is his descendant. You know what I really wanted, which is the thing that pissed me off? Like, once you found out he was the descendant of Hanzo Hisashi, and they gave him that kunai, I was like, hell yeah, he's gonna have a fucking get over here spear. He didn't get it. He got given fucking striker clubs and some weird gold armor, and I'm like, what the fuck?
I was super okay with that because that felt like the character select screen that I just picked randomly. Like I was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna be I'll be Louis Tan, then I'll start the game.
I unlocked my powers.
Knowing action movies and video game movies, it sounds like they're probably just making a bunch of build up to try and make more
movies. Well, the script writers who I did interviews have said they had mandates. The first mandate was they wanted a new character to sell more toys and introduce the audience to.
Of course.
So they had to use Cole Young. They were like, you got to make a new character. And then they also said Goro had to be in it, even though the writers really didn't want to put Goro in it. And that's why he pops out of a barn halfway through the movie.
The wild part is, like, nowhere. You're making a Mortal Kombat movie? Why would your thought be, in this one, I don't want Goro.
Yeah.
I want to save Goro. Like, no. You can't save Goro.
So Dave Callahan's getting hired for a lot of jobs, the main screenwriter on this. And let's just say the Shang-Chi trailer I thought looked fucking awesome. And he wrote that. But then he wrote the script for this, which I would say this the weakest part of the movie. I mean, it did really, for Chaz's credit, it felt like the video game cutscenes.
The scripts are always going to be kind of crappy.
Yeah. It was just weird.
I want to say I caught up on John Wick this last week, and that was a really interesting experience.
That's got to be a whole nother episode because I got a lot of thoughts and weird questions about that whole economy
of
assassins.
I haven't seen John Wick
2 and 3 yet.
I haven't seen one.
And I also was at my dad's, and he loves action movies and stuff, which I usually don't watch. And so he also had me watch Monster Hunter, which is a really fucking weird movie. The games hadn't played much. They're pretty weird, but the movie was really fucking weird.
that I do also want to watch because that one sounds pretty. I mean,
I'm gonna say this much: ending is terrible. They like do this huge epic battle, and then like it cuts off before the battle's over.
Damn, that sounds wild.
And they're like. They're just like, hey, we're going to make another one, and you're going to have to watch it if you want to see what happened in that battle.
That's
essentially what this Mortal Kombat movie is, too.
The ending was...
That's just action movies for you, though, in general. Like, that's true. That's one of the main reasons. That's a big reason I don't like them, is because they always are just trying to make more movies, and so they always just leave you with really shitty endings. And then sometimes they never make another movie because no one liked it. And so you just never get a continuation of the story.
You got to have just a shitty enough ending. Just enough to make them want to come back and like for like the right or wrong reasons. Because you could push them too far and then they just won't come back. That's why they don't make the sequel. But Jack, this is the big takeaway and no spoilers. This movie felt like the cutscene in new Mortal Kombat games for like a longer amount of time. Whereas the old Mortal Kombat movie was like, we're going to focus on the fights. We're going
to
put
watch them back to back.
2 versus 2, 1 versus 1. That's a good idea. That sounds
wild. Yeah, I'll just sit down, watch
like,
both of them, and then
put
write
Dark Side of the Moon on at
essay
the same time.
On it and read it to you guys.
I did enjoy Scorpion and Kano. I think Kano maybe was my favorite part of the whole movie. But Chaz is right. Like, but the thing that bothered me the most is that they don't know who these characters are, and every time a character came on screen, they're like, I'm Liu Kang. And then there'd be like a big musical cue, and then he'd be like, I'm Kung Lao. And I'm like, that doesn't mean shit to these people. They don't know who the fuck these people are.
Oh, fuck. You guys, I don't know why I just thought of this. This is a backdoor Jumanji. These guys are in a video game because there are audio cues that do imply fatality, or sometimes like theme music starts playing or whatever. I don't know.
Do they have like the fatality or whatever?
At one point, I think they do. They do. I don't think anybody says it.
Flawless
like there's
victory.
Nobody
there
in
is.
I forget what that is. Diegetic
okay.
sound.
So I think
there's no. There's no diegetic sound that says.
I can't remember, but I think
fatality.
They actually made like a Halo movie or like a miniseries or something, but I want them to make a Halo movie and have
they're making
it
a series for Showtime
like,
right
Master
now.
Master Chief is Wreck-It Shop. They're just like killing spree.
Man, that would be
shot.
So fucking choice.
Kilimanjaro.
What if you could if you could
Jack,
like,
it comes out
like, set up the audio for that. Just make a commentary.
Jack, I believe
track
it comes out in August. Showtime
time.
Is doing a Halo series with Pablo Schreiber. Leaves much bigger brother is playing Master Chief. Pablo Schreiber was in things. He was in the It's Always Sunny Christmas.
That's awesome.
Man.
Okay, Outsiders.
And he was in The Wire. And he was in a really fucked up arc of SVU.
American
Gods. I like how you started with It's Always Sunny Christmas and then went to The Wire.
That was the first role where I was like, this
Outsiders,
guy's fucking good.
If enough of you guys join the Discord and talk to me about it or at me on Twitter, I will make a audio track to play along with the Halo miniseries coming out, and it'll have headshot,
killing spree,
playing through.
Y'all gotta do this because I need that so bad.
At me.
Hey, so you guys excited for Friend of the Devil, the next Kubrick book?
Yes.
I love that it's named after one of my favorite Grateful Dead songs, too. That psychs me out, brother.
It's not one of my favorite Grateful Dead songs, but it's a very good song. I can't wait to go over the lyrics
by them, American Beauty.
In the song. Neil Cassidy did some things, and they're dictated in the song.
For sure, but I can relate to some of it, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know. Me too. It's okay.
When I first heard it, I was like, "Wow, this song speaks to me, my life right now." Then I was like, "I don't know if that's a good thing."
And it's from the album American Beauty.
Really good album.
Yeah, it's from the album American Beauty.
My favorite Dead album.
Yeah, which was then used as a title of a 1999 movie. Same year that Brokedown Palace was also used as a title of a movie. Anyway. We are here to talk
about... The Dead's influence is just rippled everywhere.
Yeah. Oh, I was almost going to not... They do ripple everywhere. That's my LSD movie. I want to call it Ripple, where it's just LSD is the main character, and it just shows all the creativity it inspires.
That sounds so fun. If you need any assistance with
I
want to
have like
regarding
don't
that.
Steal my idea, page turners. I want to have like one Albert Hoffman dips his finger in acid on accident. He just hears like the background of Sugar Magnolia. Like playing, like he just is like, what's that? And then it just builds up
to
a massive scene.
Didn't it break in his hands?
No, he accidentally dipped his finger in it. And then he left the lab and took a bike ride. And, you know, yeah, then that's history then. That's April 19th.
All right, we've been ranting for a long time. Do you want to dive in?
So we are here to talk about, I don't know where you're going to cut in the original stuff, but we're here to talk about a Fantagraphics book, which is quite revelatory to me. I'm glad I recommended it to the guys. It's called The Machine Never Blinks, which was written by Ivan Greenberg. It's illustrated by Everett Patterson and Joseph Canlis. There is a foreword by Ralph Nader and also Iggy Stone. It's a book about the history of spying surveillance. that our government has used, and it goes from basically the dawn of time to current day, and showing how surveillance has evolved to where we are now, where we're being watched and recorded everything we do, which we're being recorded right now.
I was going to say, we're on camera right now. I'm looking at my surveillance device.
Sure that our FBI agents are also hopefully intrigued. They're probably our biggest fans.
My NSA agent, Jimmy, is definitely digging this right now.
Yeah, I was going to say Jeffrey, my FBI man, and Tim, his NSA watcher, is definitely excited for the third time's the charm attempt on this episode.
They've been shutting us down. We have to talk about this book.
Well, yeah, okay, so real quick, when I was down at my dad's, he's got two little kids, and he has like a billion kids. So he's got two little ones, and they're in school, and my sister, who's like 12, she went to school, and they had her paint a picture, and it's like really cute. It's like a bunch of peeps candies, and it says like, chilling with my peeps. And then, but they're all wearing like fucking masks, like corona pandemic masks. And I'm like,
what? The peeps are wearing masks?
Yeah, they're all wearing masks. And it says like, chilling with my peeps. So
that's
like,
fun.
This is like a fucking dystopian horror film set piece. I never thought I'd see some shit like that.
Kids are so resilient. They're like ready to just make jokes.
Yeah, and it's like, well, it's like kind of like more normal for them, I think, because like they haven't gotten used to life not being fucked.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, every new thing feels like a joke.
Yeah, or it feels like it's how things should be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What terrifies me is my best friend growing up, Eric, who's like high functioning Asperger's, and he basically has made himself a millionaire from Bitcoin, has told me Bitcoin doesn't matter because he's positive the world's going to end very soon. He's like the smartest guy I know. So when he says that, I'm like, why do you think the world's going to end, Eric?
I'm not going to hedge my bets on it, but you know, at the rate we're going, every day is like a new episode of Black Mirror.
True. And especially after we read this book and learned so much about surveillance.
Okay, no, but check it out. One last thing is...
phenomenal boomerang.
Yeah, after the last year of like not really leaving the house at all, I got to be around like 15 people at once, which was insane to me. They're all vaccinated. It was super safe. Everyone had been quarantining.
Crazy.
It was for my dad's 60th birthday.
I'm so afraid of that. It's going to feel like closed orgy.
Knowing that
I'm not
going to
know how to interact with anybody.
Knowing that everyone was vaccinated and like everyone had been quarantining, it felt actually safe. I was surprised. I thought I would be freaked out, but I felt super safe. And I forgot how to socialize, but I started getting back into the rhythms, and it was really fun and gave me a huge ray of hope for our near future.
Oh, dude, yeah, I mean, we have, like, one...
Okay, let's get into this book. So, where do we start?
That's what I was going to say. Do you guys want to go chapter by chapter, or you just want to talk about how the book made you feel, or kind of the highlights of it?
Maybe we start with the first chapter, and then just see where it goes.
Iggy Stone is kind of a counterculture icon. If anyone knows, he kind of, like, spreads truth. He has a lot to do with Anonymous and stuff like that. He does the intro, which kind of just lays out the society we're living in today. It's a surveillance society. About how we're continually watched on our phones, about how the government studies our biometrics, and even has an excerpt from Mr. Snowden himself, which is cool. And that kind of introduces you to the setup of the NSA, FBI, and CIA are watching us, how they're using drones, computers, and even, you know, fake birds to monitor our activities.
That's
and from that
terrifying.
Kind of setup, it goes to the first ever example of this, which is from Homer's The Odyssey, which is the Trojan horse. That's kind of the setup for a story. They show older examples from, you know, back to before Christ to after Christ, after his death, of when surveillance was in use even back then. And that kind of sets us up, and each chapter kind of gets closer to our current day and where we're at right now in a surveillance society.
Yes. So I really liked the use of like history and actually going so far back into history. And I really liked the part about like Christianity and how it became surveillance became more normalized by thinking that like God's always watching you, which to me honestly sounds like a terrifying thing. If I was Christian, I would be really uncomfortable with the fact that God is watching me all the time, like in the shower or taking a shit or like,
all right, like, yeah.
Getting yeah. down with my lady or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's really uncomfortable.
NSA has now become our God.
An interesting point.
It's
that
true.
Is, that is very yeah. uncomfortable.
And, yeah, I mean, the, talking about how, like, slavery implemented so much into, like, the secure, or the surveillance and as, like, a form of oppression. And later the that ties it, like you keep continuously seeing surveillance used as a weapon of racism or classism.
Yeah, this book does have a lot to say about all of it, all of that. It's pretty eye opening.
For real.
The sort of like this even the beginning of it, really like the way that Jack's saying that, and Michael's explaining that the history really builds on each layer of our like modern day society, but the intro's so good at laying out sort of like a quick picture of it. Do you want to know one of my biggest takeaways from that intro that bummed me out a little bit?
Yeah.
Was the idea that like biometric stuff, right? Like implantable data about our body. It's such a fucking cool idea. And then the first thing is like, oh yeah, but somebody could steal all that data and somebody could use all that data to do all this bad shit to you. And it's yeah. like, man, that would be, how easy would it be to go to a doctor and you never have to fill out a form again? You just wait, you just put your hand on a thing and it scans the fucking NFC chip in your palm or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's so coolly futuristic. And then reading this book is like, well, there's a whole history of turning
and
cool inventive shit
cut your arm
into
off to go drain your bank
means
account
of whatever. Right. That you know what? I would appreciate if somebody took my whole goddamn arm to do that instead of stealing my identity and ruining everything
true.
Else about my
true.
Life. You
know
what I mean? It's
had
so
their
crazy
identity
that
stolen and
like these
not good.
Right. There's these pure visions of like the future that in this book really get kind of twisted, and this is like a factual book. It's more of a lecture in pictures, I think. That's fun and interesting and cartoony and cool. It really makes it simple and easy to understand, but like there's a lot of really cool ideas about the future that get warped and twisted by this perversion of power, this surveillance as a means of enforcing something mm-hmm. over somebody else or being able to secure information about some other group, you know?
Yeah,
it's something I think
it's
about
sad.
A lot.
It is the
something I think about a lot is like DNA and how it's hella fucked up, like that our DNA is being like tested and stored and sold. Yeah, but sorry, that threw me off. Let me restart. Something I think about a lot is like DNA and how it's fucked up that our DNA is constantly being like stored and sampled and sold and like people are trying to get their hands on your DNA. And but then I think about it, and a little while ago I went down like the serial killer rabbit hole of like Wikipedia. And
and always fun.
Yeah, it was great. And so then they start the Golden mm-hmm. State Killer, who it was what started that rabbit hole, because he's lived locally to where I am, and actually down
Patton Oswalt's wife,
LA
bro,
and stuff. Yeah, yeah. And so
a podcast brought that dude down.
Yeah, yeah. And so okay, but the government started like using DNA testing and storing DNA to catch him, and that's how they caught the Golden State Killer. And I can't remember the exact specifics, but that's amazing. He killed like over he killed several hundred people and like raped several hundred people and broke into hundreds of homes, and he was brought down by the DNA sampling. And so it makes me think, wow, this is a really amazing technology to be used to stop horrible, horrible people who've been killing hundreds of people. But then at the same time, it's also been used in really fucked up ways and is being used in fucked up, really scary ways.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah.
So it's like,
think about that. He volunteered that DNA to a service that was supposed, and I'm not trying to defend it, right?
Yeah. They literally took his DNA off like an envelope.
The reason they were able to compare it. No, he sent in DNA for like one of those 21andMe, I thought. Like, him and his family all did one of those 21andMe things, and then they were like, basically, think about it. In my mind, the government basically said, oh, fuck, we've got this whole catalog of people that we're trying to figure out, like, whose fucking DNA is this? Whose blood or sperm or whatever is this, right? And now everybody's just swabbing their own cheek and mailing it to a company. That company probably has something when you send it in that says, okay, whatever sample you sent us, we own so that we could destroy it in testing, quote unquote. But who knows if that's destroyed.
I'm sure they totally
they own
don't.
It at that point, and then they can sell it to the government, and then they just compare it against this whole thing.
Dude.
And they got paid by the government for our stuff that we gave them.
Yeah, definitely. Same as
how,
DNA. Yeah.
It's wild.
I don't know why the fuck they're doing it, but Apple has been buying up DNA in like massive amounts and storing it.
Well, I mean, it's the same kind of thing as you learn in this book, how Facebook and Google take all your data and then sell it to the NSA and the FBI. If you have, I may have said it earlier on our other attempts, but if you have a Facebook app on your phone and you know that 20-page document you never read and agree to, you basically give them access to all your text messages and emails for advertising purposes, which then they take all that data, all your emails, all your text messages. So when you're getting a text message you don't think you want people to see, someone at Facebook's job is to look at that text message, take it, and then later sell it to the federal government.
Okay, something they talk about in this book a lot is that there's this common thing that you hear people say that's like, if you're not doing anything you aren't supposed to, then why you should have nothing to be scared of. Why should it matter if people are watching you?
That's not the fucking
point. And
it's because
it's just fucking terrifying and a huge invasion of your privacy. Yeah. And it doesn't matter if you're not doing anything wrong. I still don't want people watching everything I do.
Yeah.
That makes you feel completely paranoid and crazy, even if you're doing everything right. And like,
well, in the way the government uses this information when they surveil us is, I mean, what they really do is they keep us separated. All that bullshit you see on social media, on Twitter or Facebook, that's just people arguing with each other. Let's say that, okay, you know, we're all liberal here, but the whole fight between liberals and conservative people could be a lot more peaceful and not as vitriol if it wasn't contained and controlled by the government with news and pointed suggestions. The reason these fights happen is because it's controlled. Because if we're kept separate, we're not together. And if we're separate, there's no way the regime that's in power will ever change, because we wouldn't be able to gather enough power to do anything, because constantly, instead of working together, we're too busy yelling at each other online about The Last Jedi or something else, or that a character is going to be a person of color that's usually white. Like, this kind of shit that people argue and spend all their time getting mad about online is just...
Well, just that happens because of surveillance. Keep people submissive. But, okay, let me just say something that I really don't want to become a rabbit hole, because we can talk all day about it and get very pointed about it. Okay, so QAnon is literally pretty much like the exact same shit that Russia and like the United States do in misinformation campaigns to like ruin countries. And it most likely probably is like run by some government. Like, the CIA does that shit all the time.
It's all from Nazis. It's all from, because all the Nazi scientists that came here in World War II, the same what not the Nazis wanted to do, and if they really took over the world to keep people submissive in line, was to have them all watch the same programs, listen to the same, you know, shows, and control them through all this mass media that they all consume, and keep them at odds with each other instead of working together. So, I mean,
this is kind of the like chaotic evil version of that. But okay, so I mean, that's evil too, but that's like lawfully evil almost. Okay, so I think that I know that the same methods that Donald Trump used to come into power are the same methods that Adolf Hitler used to come into power, which is to divide and conquer and create separation between all of the different political parties and factions inside of the United States so that he could claim the throne with people who think they're radical patriots. And so thank God we stopped that from continuing. Because we almost had a dictatorship on our hands with people saying, like, 16 more years, 32 more years. But I forgot where I was going with that.
They're still saying it.
Yeah, they are, but it doesn't fucking matter because they lost. Republicans and Democrats didn't hate each other.
To build on what you're saying, Jack, about...
We just didn't like...
No, maybe it's not.
Well...
But not like not an aggressive hatred.
Anyways,
so let's not make half of our fans hate us.
There was the Civil War a long time.
I wanted to throw something out.
That's when it got the most aggressive.
This book merely made me regret something in my early 20s. So in my early 20s in the Bay Area, when I was strapped for cash, for $300, I sold my biometrics to NASA, which. Immediately after doing, my roommate at the time told me I was a fucking idiot. And now, years later,
you could have gotten 500 for that good data.
In my 30s, I just continually think, what the fuck did NASA do with my biometrics?
They ran it through a bunch of programs.
Good Lord.
They're just seeing, like, we need to pull up, give me some biometrics of a 20-ish year old man from Northern California. All right, put him in the G simulator. Let's just see what his body feels like, or whatever. That's probably what it was.
I have thoughts on that. I really weird. Like, maybe this is a simulation psychedelic experiences, and I'm like, was that the psychedelics, or was that
maybe
NASA going?
He just
took psychedelics. Let's test our program now.
They build like an Assassin's Creed style fucking like DNA simulator, and they just start tripping balls the second they go in. They're like, "Oops, wrong guy." This is actually kind of fun.
So what Jack was saying about, like, it's pretty fucked up just thinking about somebody watching you. You don't have to be doing anything wrong, and the people that say if you were doing nothing wrong, then you don't have to worry. That's sort of best exemplified by that Panopticon.
Yeah,
that's example. One of my favorite chapters. Yeah,
it's right there at the beginning, and it really lays out. They basically designed, the idea was a prison where a single or a group of guardsmen can watch from a central tower. It was a circular prison, no doors, no nothing, but at all times they were under the threat of being watched by somebody above them that they can't really see because they're looking up into the sun. They could just mill around the yard. They're basically kept in line through fear that whatever they might cross the line doing, they're going to get punished for. And that's what keeps them in line, is that they don't know when somebody's watching.
You're talking about modern day America, right?
What also we said about God. So he's always up there watching. But there's two different ways of looking at that, right? God in this idea is probably, like, I don't know what real, if we're just going to throw this argument out there, he doesn't have anything to gain from watching me. He's supposed to already know whatever goes down. Does some guard have something to gain over me if he's watching me? If he sees me smuggle some contraband, then he has power over me. He can tell me I'm in the wrong. He can punish me more.
Well, Santa Claus won't give you presents. He's
always
watching.
This prison, I feel like, is where surveillance gets, like, the most dangerous. Like, this is surveillance as pure literal power, is this Panopticon.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite chapters each time I've read this book. Just the whole explanation of how Bentham created that design for the Panopticon. And how you were saying, Chess, how it relates so much to what the government does today, where it really shouldn't be the point of if you're doing something right. I mean, we're kind of beating something over the head, but it's more about, like, civil rights. Like, it, regardless of what you're doing, you're giving away your freedom to just exist.
It's just
when
basic
someone's watching
human
you
rights.
24/7, yeah. Basic human rights, yeah. Which, I mean, we have these, as countercultural nuts, me and Jack are, we're rubbing off on Chess, hopefully. Well, revolution yeah. soon, but
I don't know. Chaz yeah. seems like a counterculturist.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not too straight-laced. I'm no,
maybe a little more mild than me and you.
Fucking Michael J. Fox's name on Family Ties. I'm no
Alex Keaton. Alex Keaton.
Yeah. Michael Keaton's the
I hear a lot of sirens now, and I'm worrying that they found whatever those 7 gunshots were this morning, which...
No, man, they know that we're on to their game of surveillance and
right
power.
Here to bust
they're,
in. It's,
they're sending somebody
I'm
right now.
I'm about to experience the beginning of Hackers. Like, feds are going to bust in and grab me off the computer.
For half of my vacation last week, and it was zero really, cool. Honestly, it was nice. I missed the sirens and gunshots and cars and trains and shit. It helped me sleep because of my tinnitus and made me feel more at home.
I'm the opposite, Jack.
I had to get out of nature to know that I wanted to be in the city.
No, bro. When I left the city, like, I had to because Corona was making me insane. But when I left and I came out to the forest, it was actually quiet and I couldn't sleep for like a week. I just had a horrible insomnia.
No, that's, fuck, I said it backwards. Yeah, it's like one of those good movie trailers where they're like, they had to leave what they knew to find what they did, or whatever. And it's like, I had to go to nature to know I love the city.
I don't know, with the young baby, if you're a father, I'm sure you understand my thing, but going to the bathroom at 6 a.m., which is what I was doing, and then hearing 7 gunshots go off while you're sitting on the toilet, we have a baby in the other room, is not a good feeling.
I'm sure that experience. Because like
that makes me want to run back to nature as soon as possible.
For me, it's kind of like, oh, what's going on? Should I go check it out? But like for you, it's probably like, I need to keep my baby safe. Yeah. Like,
it's exactly my thing. Yeah.
So let's proceed. So we are at the Panopticon. Is that what it was called?
Panopticon. Okay.
I wish I got to reread this book
and about how that...
before hopping on, but you know, because I was out of town, I'm just flipping through it again.
Don't worry.
Yeah. So then we lead up to slavery.
Yeah, it's all good.
Yeah, slavery and surveillance is the next part, which Chaz previously touched on in our other recording, but it's really crazy about how slaves would inform on each other to get kind of higher regards with their slave owner.
Fucking snitches.
Which kind of shows... Well, I mean, it shows the behavior today with even NSAs are just like paid narcs. Mm-hmm. Instead of supporting each other, we have such an environment that's been built since slavery times to, you know, narc our fellow brothers out for our own personal gain.
Even people in like counterculturist groups are like illegal, you know, trades, like mobsters and gangsters and shit all snitch on each other so that they can get out of trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's something we still, see today. You know, everyone's always selling out information to get off the hook on whatever bullshit they're into. Or even in this situation.
Yeah, you can't sell yourself out.
Well, I mean,
if you want to get paid and trade a little info. I mean, yeah, you can, I guess, but like, you got to be real fucking slick.
Well, no, probably. I guess so. Also, people like give information out, and then they can just get away with whatever the fuck they want as long as they're feeding information to the police.
Oh yeah, criminal informants—they'll do terrible things, but if they're selling out the fellow people in their business, it doesn't matter.
The cops are like, "Oh, you like fucking kneecapped that guy and like sold a bunch of crack, like." That's fine, because you told us about some other guy that did the same thing, and we'll go arrest him.
Everything's square.
So back to the slavery thing, I thought it was really interesting about how slaves were teaching each other how to read. And
yeah, I was about to bring the same point up.
Yeah, well, why don't you get into it? You're fresh
on
this book.
Well, I just feel like how the slave owners would make it so their slaves couldn't read, because if they could read... they could see signs, which would help them find underground railroads or get to the north where they'd be free. And they could also learn how to read books, which would educate them, or books like the Bible, but mostly books to educate them so they would stay, you know, kind of what the government tries to do to us today, keep us fat, stupid, lazy, not going to do anything. They tried to keep the slaves back then stupid.
We'll get into the education and submissive system and class gateways real soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought it was interesting, too, because their ability to read maps and road signs helped them.
Yeah, that was the most important factor, so they could get out of there.
And not being able to know where they're going without being able to read, like, was a huge detriment. And so it became, like a huge punishable offense for slaves who were caught learning how to read.
Yeah, which is nuts because really I feel like it's just fucking crazy that we had slaves at one time.
Oh, dude, it's like the most horrible thing that like I can imagine. It's fucking crazy. Slaves. And it's crazy too that it wasn't even us. It was like all over the world, and like, but it was us so recently is what's the most fucked up about it.
Like, that's the wilder part. Yeah, that it's like
it was like less than like 200 years ago.
Yeah,
yeah, like it's wild. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's
150 years ago. This shit was the norm.
There we go. Yeah, that's probably a better estimate.
Built on stolen land with slaves, like
stolen labor.
Yeah. Hey, we're finally doing reparations.
That's another good part, though.
Ancestors of slaves, though, like the government's starting to do payouts in certain states.
Maybe they're trying. Yeah, they're super trying. I don't know. We'll see. Yeah. I'd love it, but I wish I was optimistic. There's too many old white men in the Senate, but a whole nother. That's talking politics. That's a whole different. That's a whole different podcast.
I feel really
outside the dipping our toes into the political line.
Outside the parties. A lot of
we're gonna go deeper and
modern,
deeper.
So we're not
a lot of modern surveillance has roots in slavery. That's I think the important part.
Yeah, the roots like, of
the important
our
part
government
to tie around is that, yeah, a lot of it has roots in slavery and in keeping people under the impression that somebody is watching them that's more powerful than you and can control what you do with your life. That's why you need to be careful. And that's a wild concept that they took and like we defeated, right? We said no more as a country. And literally fought each other over it. And then the government was like, but you know, it's not actually too bad an idea. Yeah. if we make it us that's watching them.
I guess this leads us into our next chapter, which is...
the Industrial Age.
Yes. I was thinking it was the Red Scare, but you're right. It is the Industrial Age. And pretty much how, you know...
the Henry Ford shit in here is crazy.
Yeah, I guess more to the Red Scare stuff, but using essentially the same people being like, well, shit, we can't own slaves. Well, let's just make people wage slaves. Let's just let's just make it so people are into a situation where there's no possible way out except for, you know, continuing to work these shitty jobs for terrible pay in systems where they can't change anything. And, you know, using, like, the education system that people can only get good jobs by going to good schools that they could only afford or get into by being from wealthy families. And so that essentially creates, like, this...
And
wage slave working class and keeps people oppressed.
Wouldn't matter. They just get a job.
Exactly.
Anyways.
And so the surveillance ties in. The surveillance ties in by like all of the spying and union
busting. With the assembly line.
And union busting, which is really important right now because of the things going on Amazon with the attempts to unionize and essentially the same shit happening at Amazon and some really scary, scary spying stuff that I'm not going to get into on this podcast, but you can at me and I'll hit you up about it.
And to get on Jack's topic, if I can add to you real quick. So basically what Jack was saying, and just to have to give you guys an idea, is like they couldn't have slaves anymore. So the rich were like, let's turn all the lower class into wage slaves. So they created factory jobs where everyone in the Industrial Revolution, if you were not the upper class, you had to have a factory job. And that's when literally Henry Ford created the assembly line and the actual what you do every day now, clock into your job and clock out, having that record was created by Henry Ford. And that was on the assembly line where they'd have supervisors watch people on the assembly line do the same job over and over and they would time them. And if they slipped on their time at all, they'd get punished, which puts, you know, us lower class people into the idea that we're still doing the regular idea that the only way we'll survive if we become wage slaves, we follow these demands, we do something at a rate, and there's always a record of it, and we're always kind of at the whim of our supervisors or people above us.
We're so goddamn overworked and tired, and it takes so much time out of your life that it's pretty much impossible to like find any way out of it too, like, or try and get a higher education, or and you can't really save money because the cost of living is so high. and you're making so little that...
And that's all just for more wage slaves.
And so, so, like they, that. So you're literally just stuck. Right now, and there's no way out.
You might have a master's degree and the job only pays $15 an hour.
Exactly. It's just getting worse and worse, and the division of wealth is getting even getting insane. A higher education.
Yeah, it's...
So, it's really sad that it started here and has only continued to get worse.
And I'll go on a tangent here, as being raised by, like, burner people and going to Burning Man and stuff. Even then, where Burning Man started as, like, let's fucking destroy the government with anarchy, let's do away with money, which is a good idea, and let's just go by trade.
And it's now completely
In a perfect world, that's how it would be, is we'd all just trade the goods we'd want, we'd work in whatever profession we wanted, which would help society, and we wouldn't have a need for money because someone would be the farmer, someone would print the books, someone would be the black, you know, someone would, you know, manufacture that, and we'd trade on goods. That was the idea of Burning Man, but even that has now been infiltrated by Silicon Valley, and now Burning Man is run by .com companies. So even that is, I mean... So,
because they want to watch and they want to learn. They want to learn what's hip and they want to sell what's hip to the people that are next to Burning Man. They're not...
Okay.
They're worried about what did we sell this year that we can't sell next year? What will we sell next year that wouldn't have sold this year?
Yeah.
So I do understand the idea of a free trade barter system, but... What I was explaining to my sister the other day, because she's starting to get really into like these radical ideas, is the reason that currency is so important is because I can't just go and like take a chicken to a guy because I want a new watch or like a bunch of chickens. Like, and that guy might not even want chickens. So I'd have to take those chickens to a guy to trade for a cow to trade for the watch and hope that that works out. And it might not even work out. And like, there's no way to make the trade work. But with currency, it's essentially an IOU note that you can take, and I can give somebody wants my chickens, so they can give me an IOU note, and I can take that IOU note over to somebody who has the watch, and then they can give me the watch, and they can spend the IOU note on the cow. And everyone gets what they want without having to haul things around and find the perfect trades.
Yeah.
And so currency is a very beautiful system when it works, but it's not doesn't work because... of the fact that it's not backed by anything real. Like it used to be when it was backed by gold in Fort Knox.
Either the gold
and so when we had the gold standard, then money was actually worth something because they couldn't just falsely inflate it as much as they want. And so currency was a very beautiful thing, but it's now a huge detriment in the way that it works. Because, because the lower class continues to have their money just devaluate and devaluate, while the upper class keeps getting bailouts. And so that makes it so that with the adjusted value of the US dollar, to make the same amount of money at minimum wage as back in the 40s, which federal minimum wage is only $6.50. So to make the same minimum wage as back in the 1940s, we'd have to have a federal minimum wage of $27 an hour.
That's fucking crazy. So that's a person who has to support
times
a family.
Less than like
that's
you,
fucking
people,
crazy.
Or people make about 5 times less money on average for the same work as the people in the '40s. And so also fuck boomers who are like, you're just not applying yourself. You just need to work more. Blah blah blah. And it's like, I couldn't buy a house when I was 20 because I wasn't making 5 times the amount of money I am. I can barely afford avocado toast.
It's that bullshit where they said millennials should have $150,000 saved by the time they're 30. And every millennial was like, are you fucking crazy?
Yeah, and they're like, you need to save at least half of each paycheck. Or like your living expense should be half of each paycheck. And it's like, bruh, I have like fucking $200 left a month after. And I work overtime all the time.
Do you think there's two classes of like boomers to millennials? Like there's like the older boomers who have kids a little bit later, right? So like their millennial children might have lived with them longer because they were like, just stay at home. Save your money. You never know when the housing market's going to crash because everything's going to go to shit or whatever. Yep. And then they get a house because they saved all this money because they lived at home. But there's a second generation, essentially, of like younger parents, right, who are now only maybe 20, right, 20 years older than their children. So the idea of them saying like, you should have saved $150,000 by the time you were 30. And it's like, you were having me by the time you were 30. So like... what the fuck? How did you save $150,000 and have a kid or whatever? So
it's because there's no gold standard.
I don't know. I think there's
that's
like
what it is, because currency no, is fucking not. Amazing. If we have it, actually is worth something, and it's not. They literally, JFK got, my FBI agent's going to hate me for saying this, but JFK
got killed because of all this.
He got shot in the head on the way to sign documents to go back onto the gold standard.
Well, this is, I'm going to shout it real quick, me and Jack's friend, Beamer Scotty. So, I don't know if everyone knows about this. This is going to get into some real deep shit that people don't know about. Right? Okay, so President Kennedy wanted to have money, currency that was actually backed by the taxes of Americans, not the banks, which would take power away from the banks. And he did actually make a $2 bill that's blue. Only, I think, 1,500 were ever out, like, in currency. Scotty, Beamer Scotty has two of them. So they were, like, blue $2 bills. And President Kennedy was trying to do this. He was trying to take power away from the banks, which basically control these governments we're talking about, by controlling the currency. And that heavily has to go with what you're saying, Jack, why he got murdered and killed, because he was trying to do things right for the people. And people also don't talk about that the Sunday before he was murdered, he literally said at the church he grew up in, "I have exposed a plot to enslave every man, woman, and child in this country, and I will do everything in my power to expose this plot."
Ooh,
and then literally the Thursday after that, bam! I mean, that's literally... he did not want to play the game. He did not. He found out what the game was, and he was like, "Fuck you guys."
He was a good.
I'm going home.
Man.
Damn.
Yeah, he was the best president we ever got.
That's why they killed him.
That's why they
actually gave a shit about the people.
Well, yeah.
I was gonna say, you want to know what a dollar or like the U.S. whatever is really worth? It's worth a promise to each other. That's all it is. Because if at any point more of us than less of us realize that, like, yeah, it's all fucked. Like, none of this really means
then we'll
anything,
all dump our money
right?
into crypto, because like, it doesn't...
And that's
not even that.
It's inflation-proof.
Even if we pull it out of all the banks, they're just going to make more to, like, support the banks and be like, "Oh, yeah, guys, by the way, we're doing 200% interest. You should put your money back in, and then we could get it all back and figure it out," or whatever, or right? Like, they're never... nobody's going to do that, because all it takes... It's the same thing as this. As the surveillance, right? The minute that you look like you're doing something that's outside the norm is the minute that you're more afraid somebody is watching you to turn you in. Either your FBI agent in the camera that you're probably looking at right now on your phone while you listen to this podcast, or on your computer, whatever it is, put the piece of tape over it so they can't watch you as you realize that the fucking US dollar is like just as good as we say it is.
Yeah,
that's it.
It's basically
you know what I mean,
an IOU. You create the money.
Can you imagine if you paid somebody with something and they were like, "Yeah, I don't know, I think I need more dollars than that. Like, I don't believe that this is worth quite that." And then they were like, "But also the government says it is." And it's like, "Yeah, but they could just print it if they want. They've just been printing it. It doesn't fucking matter." Like,
small crypto tangent about my best friend I brought up earlier off Mike, that has become a millionaire off crypto. He watches crypto. He's a millionaire off it. And he got extremely worried this summer because the government and Google and Apple and several banks. So if anyone knows how crypto works or Bitcoin, there's only a certain amount of Bitcoin. And every time Bitcoin is harvested and taken from mining or people purchasing it, getting and acquiring Bitcoin, Bitcoin becomes worth more. Right now, it's worth $78,000 of Bitcoin. And that's because more Bitcoin's getting bought up. And the reason it had this huge spike this summer and why my friend went from being worth about $200,000 to being worth $1.8 million right now is because these companies and banks bought up a giant majority of Bitcoin during
Goldman
the summer,
just opened,
which made him highly
crypto.
Worried about the complete failure of the U.S. dollar, the government going back on the U.S. dollar, and us being in a fuck state where all of a sudden they went, "Okay, now our currency is Bitcoin, but guess what? We have all the Bitcoin. You want some Bitcoin? You got to work for it." Another kind of way of controlling.
Do you really think that the government is going to say our money isn't worth anything? For 4 years, we had an orange fucking puppet as a president just saying the wildest shit. And at no point did the whole world go like, "Hey, by the way, guys, fucking, maybe this money isn't worth anything. If this is the person that they fucking elect, like,
I think he's being paranoid, but the information about the banks is worrisome. The deal is that
fucking crypto is decentralized currency, which means the government can't do really much interference. Like, they can't even tax you on transactions made with crypto unless it's turned into cash. So once you pull it out, or when you're buying it for cash.
And right now, unless
which is
you're
really
just
cool if you want to not pay a ton of taxes on stuff.
What if you
so
pull
here's
it
the
out
other thing is
into a different currency and then turn it into the U.S.
That's a good idea. Yeah. Turn it into like Canadian money and then take that to
the
exchange.
You'd still have to pay
turn
taxes.
Into U.S. dollars.
Yeah. You still have to pay taxes on that. But it's
well, I mean,
really
he's
cool
being paranoid about that.
Okay, no, but so here's the part that's important is that our economy inflation is really bad, but that's comparative to other like third world countries, it's far, far worse. Like, I was reading about some Middle Eastern country where the inflation, the dollar there has literally halved in value over the last year. And so people in countries like that are buying as much crypto as they can and literally dumping all of their money into crypto because it's decentralized, so it's not losing value from inflation. And so it's in the US it's being used more as an investment, where all around the world it's starting to become adopted as a way of not being fucked by the government, which is what it's actually purposed for.
That's why I'm
all about investing in it and all that, but it's really, really important.
That's why Satoshi
so that
made
governments
it
can't
was for that.
Over. Yeah. And it's a really beautiful thing that crypto exists. And I've been investing in several different cryptos I believe in, and I really believe in it. Yeah.
BitConnect. If you get a what's it called? Real random, not exactly on tangent, but also on tangent. Another weird thing about our country is you gotta think about BP. Let's talk about the Revolutionary War for a second. If you think about how much oil British Petroleum owns in the US, seems like, you know,
a fuckload.
Certain factions that we got in wars with and we're supposed to be separated from. That we're not that separate from,
well,
which is
it's
another
all about that De Niro,
weird mastery.
Baby.
another weird, you know, illusion that the government that is just so much shit.
Oh yeah, I'm not going to get into it, but like literally the whole Middle East is just being used as like a military sandbox for proxy wars with other countries, and to use up all of our military resources so that we can pay for more to fuel our military machine and like support a huge part of our economy, and then also extract all the oil, which we all know. Like, let's get back into the book because we've been going way off.
This is all related to what the book is talking about, though. This is all in spirit of what the book.
I'm
definitely know COVID is real and it's been a horrible pandemic that's ravaged our country.
It's been taken advantage of
way. Yeah, it's been totally taken advantage of. And just like before, pre-pandemic, when I was working production full-time and stuff, it was just fascinating and so uplifting that there'd be 50,000 like-minded individuals having conversations like we're having conversations together. And I mean, we're luckily doing Zoom and still staying in touch, but the way that they've took advantage of the pandemic to just really keep us, well, they've kept us all separate. It's like, I felt like we were progressing, which is kind of our history, where I feel like we're progressing a little bit, but then we take 40 steps back.
Well,
now
two
it's
steps
a lot harder
forward,
for
one step back. It's slow, slow progress, and sometimes shit gets real bad, but
yeah,
we're better off. We don't have slaves anymore, at least. That's one thing.
it's just like we need to find common ground so we can gather and have conversations, even if we don't agree on the same things, you know, instead of arguing about what we do and don't like, maybe, you know, like in comics, which is the comics podcast and we're all comic fans, instead of arguing about the things you like in comics and instead of the things you don't like in comics, why don't you just gather the fact you fucking like comics?
Find a middle ground.
We both like comics. Why are we arguing? We both love the same thing. Maybe you didn't like that comic. I didn't like this one, but that's okay because we both love comics. You know, it's just, why is that not the attitude that, because I mean, I know me and Chaz have liked and disliked different comics, and we don't fucking scream at each other about it or fucking harass each other about it. It's just like, because we both love comics, which is the base, you know, foundation of this fandom, is that we have the same, you know, addiction, which is, it's kind of an addiction that we both enjoy it. Instead of like what you see online is people tearing each other down over fucking trivial things that don't matter, that people shouldn't even get upset about. We're on the first red scare.
You know what else should bind people together? The fact that
we're humans.
Everyone everywhere is being listened to all the time and watched all the time. And basically all of that information is going into a big Westworld database where algorithms pick apart what we say. So basically this episode was a curveball, or has been so far, a curveball to all of the programs listening out there, because they won't fucking know what to make heads or tails of this.
It's true. My good friend, who's from Silicon Valley, she doesn't work there anymore. She became way counterculture. She lives now, actually, where Jack lives and where I used to live. But she was from the Bay Area, and she used to work for a company where all they did was create algorithms off of everyone in the United States, off of their social media data. And they would predict up to 10 years where the person would be, the job they'd be working, whether they'd have family, just off the data they gathered off their social media and their transactions they made. Which is
Westworld.
Yeah. Exactly. Westworld season 3, right? Yeah.
In the first half when it had good ideas, and then not
before
the second
half. Before it dribbled into weird Fight Club nonsense.
Failed to like develop those ideas. Yeah. But we have moved into the Red Scare, one of the, I think, most interesting surveillance moments in American history. Like
McCarthyism.
Just overall. Yeah. Uh-huh. The idea that you're gonna be out there making popular entertainment that influences the masses and maybe tells them watching them all the time isn't so hot. But also know we're watching you all the time. So if you try to say watching people all the time isn't okay, we're going to make life hell for you. Yep. That's what. Welcome to my TED Talk on McCarthyism. We're watching you all the time. Don't feel upset about it.
Real quick, and we'll come back to it later, is that the Red Scare and the Red Scare 2 are just okay. The war in Iraq and the war on terror was just Red Scare 3. I'm just gonna say that, throw it out there, and we'll come back to it later.
All
right. So the Red Scare was mainly used. We used Russia as a communist threat. But we blew it completely out of proportion, and then used that as an excuse so that we could shut down socialist parties and people who were coming up with radical ideas about how to make the government better for the people. And so we used the threat of communism to shut down socialism. And social programs are amazing. Like, you know, good schools, healthcare, good roads, all this from taxing the rich. But of course the powerful people and like in the government, like they're friends who own companies and all the lobbyists don't want that to happen. So they were doing whatever they could to try and use these blown out of proportion extremists and like this other country, that communist country that's just had like a horrible government system, as like examples to shut down a much more. Our country's not supposed to be a capitalist or communist. It's supposed to be a hybrid, which is socialism. That's like literally what our country was built to be, was a socialist country. But people now think that socialism is like the same as communism, and it allows like corporations and the government to oppress us further. And so they use the Red Scare to start that whole thing, and we still see the effects of that today. What do you want to add, Chaz?
I agree. McCarthyism did kick off an era of more widespread and almost scandalized coverage of surveillance, right? Like it really made a show of either people turning each other in, you didn't know who to trust, right? Or the fact that they would know everything about you and they'd be able to determine this stuff about you. So the idea that communism being the big threat, being the other in this instance, is pretty on point with everything else you were saying. that this really, I think, kicked off a wave of the ideas of saying the things that aren't American are wrong, or the things that don't align with my vision are things that we need to watch, and we need to watch closely because they'll turn bad fast.
Free market capitalism is the only way, because communism is what will happen if we are not free market capitalists. What wrong could happen?
I feel like one of the big fears about communism too, or at least from my understanding of what people that are vehemently or even I guess high school history or college history against as far as communism goes, is that like Big Brother is going to look at everything and he's going to say, you have too many cows, you have too many chickens, they have not enough cows, they have not enough chickens. Spread it all out and make it even.
And that's communism, so, not socialism.
But the threat is, in communism, there's somebody above you that tells you what to do with your stuff.
Yes.
There's a higher party, there's a surveilling party that says, you have too much, you don't have enough, that's what's wrong, that's what's right, this is how we're going to fix it, I know what's good. And I agree that socialism is sort of that perfect blend of having enough pushback to say, no, I don't agree with that, and here's why, and talking about it. But overall, I think the McCarthyism stuff is really personified in the idea of what I was saying about watching, about surveilling, that the power in that comes from, we need to know so that it doesn't take away from our values. But the fear that they're trying to instill is that somebody else is going to watch them. Even though we are in the process, the people in power are in that actual process right there. They are watching and they are saying, this is what you're doing is wrong.
It's just crazy though, regardless of where you lie with communism, that your political views, I mean, would completely derail your life back then, where you wouldn't be able to even have a job or exist in that country because of views you had. I mean, it's just nuts. And, you know, to the modern era, which we've kind of expressed today, is all through, you know, social networks now, and the things you do on the internet is all tracked and recorded and stored as data. Apple has tried to push back and, you know, kind of protect their people's data. They've gone to court twice about it. But all this data is sold to the government. Zuckerberg, who created Facebook, makes, you know, his biggest dollars doing this. He's been doing it since it started. He's going to continue to do it. Facebook's just a giant, as people have said, Nazi spy machine. So, I mean, yeah, it's good for connecting people, but that's not what makes Zuckerberg money.
And it's not about connecting people. It's about learning about people.
Yeah.
It's about gathering information about people. And I think where they really make money is in advertising. And that advertising is paid for the information that we provide about what we like and what we don't like. And we voluntarily provide that because we think it's cool to share that with everybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's pretty wild that so much of the lesson about what you put online is usually guarded to posting, let's say, compromising photographs or video of yourself, right? That's the big idea. Whatever you put out there, you can't get that back. Once you squeeze out the toothpaste, how are you going to put it back in the tube, right?
Yeah, it's just...
But that should apply to everything. Like, it's insane to me. After reading this book, I really thought about how much I put out there, right, for free. Because to me, it has no value. I can't go to Amazon and say, hey, I'll build you a profile and I'll sell you whatever I look at. They're not going to care. They're not going to give me... Because what, I'm worth how much, maybe? $10, $15?
Yeah.
And that's generous considering how many users are there of Facebook. Times that by even that amount, right?
Yeah.
That's their ad revenue. That's what they're paying for your data, let's say. So, yeah. But you can't, as an individual, we can't sell this.
No.
It gets sold on our behalf after we volunteer it. We basically fill out all those surveys that you can do for money, but don't get money at the end.
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck, you know? And I also, there's a part of me for sure, and I'm sorry that I'm talking for a long time, but there's a part of me for sure that thought, it's all bullshit kind of when they say that like everything But everything is getting fucking looked at. There's somebody at the FBI. There's somebody at the NSA. There's somebody at the CIA. It doesn't matter. There's some alphabet soup agency out there that's pulling all this information in, and it's got all of it. And I was like, no way. There's so many people sending texts, making calls, IMing, posting some dumb shit online. There's no way that they're collecting all of it. They are.
Yeah.
It's all collected. They don't know what to do with it.
No.
But they got it.
I mean, so they have it if they
need it. It's a matter of time.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So it's insane to me that that's the modern day, is that we volunteer for the surveillance. And if you opt out of it, you can't even most of the time. Michael, you said to delete the Facebook app that's on your phone right now. A lot of times you can't.
Yeah, you can't
even. It
stays rooted on there once you install it, yeah.
And I paid for that privilege. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's the wild part. So it's nuts that it's deeply ingrained. It's rooted in racism and power over our fellow man.
And oppression.
Or yeah. Woman. Power over our fellow member of Earth.
Yeah, right? Brothers and sisters on the planet Earth.
Yeah. It's rooted in all this bad stuff, and now that we're in the modern age, we basically volunteer to do it.
Yeah, and pay. I mean, you got to get that smartphone a lot of times to get access to some things. Yeah,
to get it on the go, because I gotta look at my statuses in the middle of the day.
Yeah,
I gotta know what Jeffrey's doing.
I've been free for 3 years, and it feels so good. But I mean, I was a sucker when I worked production. I'd be posting every festival I went to, try to get people there. I mean, that was partially promotion for, you know, myself and the events too, but still just posting where I was constantly. Remember the square where you do square and you check in at every single place you went? Like,
I could be the mayor.
If you checked in enough times. It's just crazy how we volunteer every place we are all day. So even though they're gathering the data, they don't even have to look at all the data because you already made it in a post. Oh, well, I know where they are.
Right.
You just make it even easier for them to do their job, which.
Yeah.
These are the kind of discussions this Fantagraphics book causes.
Okay, and so all of this, big picture, all of this is essentially how earlier I said the war on terror and all of this was the Red Scare too. So none of us can deny the fact that 9/11 was a huge, huge tragedy and it was very scary and traumatic for the entire United States. And no matter which side of the fence you're on about conspiracies or yes, it definitely actually happened or yes, they let it happen or whatever, the fact of the matter is it happened and it was fucking horrible. But the United States blew the terrorist threat completely out of proportion so that they could pass things like the Patriot Act, which allow them all of our information and privacy. And they can literally like watch our webcams, listen to our conversations, store this all in databases. And so our government is essentially using terror tactics via the war on terror to apply surveillance techniques to the populace, with or without us knowing.
And now, definitely with and actively participating in.
Exactly. We used to not
I watched a really,
now we do,
a really sobering I watched a really sobering, and it's older, a really sobering Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, where he interviewed Edward Snowden, and they showed like him interviewing people on the street, asking if they knew who Edward Snowden was and like what he did, and so many of them were like, no, who's that? Or, oh, that's the guy that runs WikiLeaks. It was so either like super duper wrong, or totally they were like, I don't fucking know who that is. And then they laid out everything that the government does have access to under the Patriot Act, under the frame of, what if it was your dick pic that got sent out that the government could look at, and everybody's like, no way, you're not supposed to look at that. And it's like, well, that's what they're doing, guy.
They can.
That's what they're
doing
all day, every day. That's what your FBI man is responsible for, looking for lumps and looking for weird stuff.
Biography or biographical film about Snowden, they even show, and you know, all this stuff had to get like approved, that his buddy who worked for the NSA as well was watching through someone's webcam a couple having sex in their apartment. So anyway, we've been going for a long time, and we should probably wrap up. Are there any final thoughts you guys want to add in there?
Y'all got to read this book. It's going to change the way you look at the internet forever. But also, it's pretty sobering. There's nothing you could really do to change what you do unless you drop everything and move to the woods. But, I mean, like, you'll learn a lot. And this will make a lot more sense if you read it. Or if you read it, hopefully this made sense.
For the ignorance is bliss types, don't read it. But otherwise, it's fucking phenomenal.
I really recommend moving into the woods. I highly miss the woods, and hopefully we'll be moving back there soon. I miss it so much.
Just watch out for birds.
I did, but it was mostly pandemic-related reasons.
I mean, if Paige Turner is helping you know now to think about when you send text messages and what you do on the internet, just because you're constantly being observed, if you find this fascinating and like the conversation started, and that's because Fantagraphics gets to release these books, which are awesome, and get to say whatever they want. So I'm glad that we are diving into it. Next week, we have our last Fantagraphics episode where we're going to cover the Starseed Saga with the author, Charles Glaubitz, which is going to be a lot of fun. It's really heady. And he seems pretty heady, too. So I'm excited for the very, very weird conversations we're all going to have.
Yeah,
I have a feeling we did not talk about the books that much, but they're better to be experienced anyhow. So
and then, are you ready for this?
And then
drum roll.
And then next week after that, we have our favorite letter. We talk about him all the time, and he listens to our show, which is fucking crazy. Adicho, if I'm saying it right, when you listen to this, I hope you know we are ecstatic to have you on. You send me very kind words, which I thank you. I mean, we love you, and
phenomenal
it's cool
work,
to hear some, you know. Hear it back from you guys. Hear you yourself. Thanks for taking the time to listen to us. We can't wait to have you on and talk about all the books you're on, which is pretty much like 90% of what I'm
reading. Very excited to meet the legend himself.
Most excited to try to dig Department of Truth spoilers out of him without trying to seem direct.
Another drum roll.
And then we're going into a manga-thon.
Ooh, manga-thon.
I think we have a preliminary list. We know we're going to cover these titles. There might be more, but we're going to cover Demon Slayer, we're going to cover Chainsaw Man, we're going to cover Kaiju number 8, we're going to cover an old school awesome book called 20th Century Boys, which I'm reading right now, and I really can't wait to have these guys read. We're going to cover Mashle, which Chaz got me into, and now I'm addicted to it. It's like, it gets my Harry Potter nostalgia mixed with my anime nostalgia at once, so it's like a double shot of nerd crack. So like,
it's so funny.
It's so funny, and it's really addictive. And it looks like Hogwarts. I mean, it really helps me when I'm reading it. And like,
it really is.
That's our new title for our show.
And is there one more? Am I missing one?
Full Metal Alchemist,
which I cannot
forget. Manga / anime of all time.
I'm gonna disagree with you, but
we're doing My Hero Academia.
What? Yeah, 20th Century Boys.
We're gonna do that too, huh?
I'll battle you out on which one's a better manga.
No,
you should do My Hero also.
Yeah, I fucking love
that. My Hero is the best manga.
To be fair, The Full Metal Alchemist was the first manga I ever read.
It's great.
When I was like fucking 12 years old or something. It's an old one for sure now, or like 10 maybe, I don't know, hella young. Definitely the first manga I read, and the first anime series was not that great, but it was one of my introductions to anime as well, and so I am very biased towards it, but I fucking
that first series, wow,
and that's why I picked it, even though it's a really old
great
book.
I'm down to do whatever manga. We don't even really know how long this is going to go on, since we're all kind of into manga right now. But that's what's coming.
Yeah, it might be manga June too.
We could even start slamming out multiple episodes a week again if we get really into it and have the time. Which you probably don't, but we'll see. We can try.
And then after that, we're gonna bring back Joe Paquette, and we're gonna very, very lately finished a Simon Spurrier miniseries with a double episode on Hellblazer and Alienated, which will be cool. And then we're going into two new comic writers, which is going to be something different. And we'll announce them a little bit later that Chaz picked, which I think that might be something we'll do in the future, do two different writers and alternate instead of doing a writer and publication house, just because we should change it up a lot, kind of like we're doing manga now, keep you guys on your toes. I mean, weird episodes to come. Yeah.
You guys got to join our Discord, Outsiders. You know, get that shit popping. Talk to us directly and keep up with what's going on. We talk about all sorts of shit.
We will post the link again. We need to post the link again, yeah, though, because there's probably like 50,000 groups as Outsiders.
That's true. That's true.
I think there's probably like 50,000 groups named that. So we will post the link again. So look out for it.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll get you. We'll make it happen.
Or just add us. Add us on Twitter.
But in the meanwhile, you can follow us on Twitter at OutsideThe with a zero at the front.
Yep.
And you could find me at Chaz Simons, also on Twitter. Michael, where can they find you?
They can find me at PoetAir33.
And you can find me at Sin_Aesthetics with an X on Twitter. And also hit up my SoundCloud at Sin Aesthetic. I'm going to be putting up a new track this weekend, and I do the intro and outro music, and I'm very excited for what I've been secretly working on for the manga May. But I guess it's not secret anymore. Yeah.
I'm pretty fucking excited too.
We're gonna get Naruto tracks.
Oh, definitely. I definitely have a Naruto track that's going to be thrown in there.
All right. That's awesome.
Yeah,
I can't wait for manga trap.
If somehow you guys don't know who listened to the podcast, Naruto is like my favorite shit ever, and I fucking love it. But I'm leaving it out of manga May because it's too much.
it's a saga.
Yeah, we could talk about
that.
Do a 24-hour live stream talking about Naruto. All right, so let's do it.
Well, page turners, be good to yourself, be good to others, and we hope you learn some things today. And right now, we're all being watched. Chess?
Yeah. Say goodnight to your FBI agent. Turn the page and wash your hands.
Outside the pages.